Sim.
This is Gilbert Andrew Garcia. Listen to my radio show, A Tip from Gilbert. Talk, inspiration, and prayer every Monday from 11 a.m. till noon on Houston's gospel leader, KWWJ, 1360 a.m. and streaming live on KWWJ.org. Listen on the legendary KYOK, 1140 a.m. and streaming live on KYOKradio.org. KCOH, 1230 a.m., The Source. On San Geek Radio, 95.1 FM, 1460 a.m. And Aliento Radio, 101.7 FM and 1540 a.m. Call in at 832-570-8075 and follow me on social media. See you then. All right, Houston, here we go with another episode of A Tip from Gilbert. I'm Gilbert Garcia, your host. And of course, I have my sidekick, Ruby Dang, with me. Ruby, you there?
I'm here. Happy New Year, Gilbert.
Happy New Year. And I've got a very important guest here, Mr. Nick Cooper. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about him in just 1 second. But you know, Ruby, holidays. Mm-hmm. The holidays are now over.
Yep.
So now it's all time for all those New Year's resolutions.
That's right.
Do you have one?
I don't.
Well, you're going to have to get one. I don't know whether it's, we're going to do a whole one contest at the firm.
Right.
Of course, right. We do it every year,
yep.
Which is the rate loss.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I've never won, Ruby.
Neither have I.
But so. I'm going to go for it.
Yep.
Same here. And then, of course, the Texans are in the playoffs.
That's right.
Have you got your tickets yet?
No. I'll watch it from the comfort of my home.
Well, the game is going to be against the Cleveland Browns.
Oh, should be fun.
It should be good. And, of course, the Cowboys now have the second seed, and they're going to be playing the – who are they playing again? It escapes me already. That's how good they are. But at the end of the day, it's going to be exciting. I love playoff football.
Yeah.
And Houston, hopefully everybody enjoyed the holiday episodes that we had where we played a lot of Christmas music. And my wife and I last night did the holiday zoo lights. If you haven't done it, it's beautiful.
Yep.
Of course, it is way too expensive because we need to let people have access to these sorts of wonderful things that are public type things, but it's expensive.
Yep. Everything's expensive.
It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, my favorite, smartest guy in the room has already, are you ready for this? Another anti-Metro blog.
Oh, no.
Another one. Houston, be in the interest of doing it all at one time. I'm going to talk all about the last four or five that he's done. Boy, is he really, angling to be the Metro chairman.
Yep.
I mean, right. I mean, you cannot be, I mean, he's like, what do you call it? Groveling to be the new Metro chairman. And I'm going to talk all about it next week because something came up very important. But I just had to say this one line, Ruby. He said, well, of course, light rail should have been elevated through the medical center. Well, of course it should have been.
He
and all the Metro haters made sure there wasn't any money.
That's right.
And they took the money from Metro so we couldn't do above grade.
Right.
Of course. And then he said something really, really interesting. Let me just see, find this other line. Hold on. It'll come to me. Maybe what I'll do is I'll let my guest talk and then I'll come back to it because it said something, frankly, pretty scary as it relates to Metro and all the people who serve Metro and all the things that we do. And he's really saying that nobody rides it. That's what he's saying.
Right.
But you know what? I bet you tonight going to the football game, it's going to be jam-packed. Every single rail car will
That's
be
right.
jam-packed
mm-hmm.
going to the, we couldn't pull off something as incredible as the, college football championship without it.
That's right.
Or you think we could do the World Cup?
No.
You think they
right.
would come here without it? Of course not.
Or rodeo season.
Or rodeo. Mm-hmm. And so he's saying, well, it only does 1%. I'm going to go through all of this for all the listeners next week. But I have my good friend here, Mr. Cooper. So welcome to the show, Nick.
Thanks so much.
And, you know, what struck me, Ruby, is I don't know where I saw it, Actually, let me take a step back. Everyone knows I was running for mayor. And I was very interested in learning more about the Food Not Bombs effort. And they are an effort that's really worldwide. I mean, this is a big organization. Are you ready for this? They're all volunteers.
Wow.
I mean, there's none of this. We're out there saying good things and the CEO's making $500,000 a year. Mm-hmm. No, these are volunteers that are really doing it, which is giving food to homeless. They're doing it out of the goodness of their heart, right? This is like, you know, if you go back, I mean, isn't that something that Jesus would do, right? I mean, help people and give them food. But what's very, very interesting is this organization that I read up on is all over. And they are an all-volunteer type organization. And I really saw some really great things about them that they have sort of a, I don't know, you want to call it a code. Or essentially, we agree. These are all the volunteers. How wonderful is all this? To use sharing of free food, exchange of information, and dialogue as a means of promoting social justice, cultural exchange, horizontal organizing, and mutual aid. I mean, how beautiful is that? Yeah. Of course, that's great. Ready? Here's another one. We agree not to use or tolerate sexual facial, had dental work done recently, excuse me, or any other form of harassment, authoritarianism, assault, or threat herein. I mean, what a great thing. They only use vegan food mm-hmm. because there's too much issues around meat products as well as, killing animals.
Right.
The whole thing. To respect each other's privacy and views. I mean, how oftentimes do you get organizations where they're always fighting about nothing, mm-hmm. right? I mean, all the time.
Yep.
And here it's in their code that you got to respect each other's privacy and views. Beautiful. Here's another thing. They agree to not sell food or otherwise profit from any donations. Wonderful. Not to represent our personal viewpoints, but to really make decisions on behalf of Food Not Bombs. To establish a group decision. In other words, let's try to work things out on what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. To act in a friendly and calm manner when police visit Food Not Bombs. And to explain to officers that we are just trying to help people. Mm. We're going to see a clip in a minute when you don't follow that. And by the way, and they all followed it.
Right.
But this is why you have to follow this, because it can go awry and go south. And that's what happened two or three days ago. I'm going to show the YouTube clip. And if anyone cannot take it or handle it, please, you know, don't look at it on your YouTube. Because at the end of the day, this is what happens. And a small spark, something so, you know, innocent, can turn into something like this. And there's a man who was being tased by, it must have been, I don't know, 6 or 7 officers who were on him. And what really struck me is, they were tasing him when he's already subdued. And what struck me is, I mean, they had that taser like right on his back, on his spine.
Oh.
I mean, like just on there. Mm-hmm. And no telling. I mean, I've never been tased. So I have no idea if it's like a wow, you know, like your whole body freezes up, or is it debilitating? I have no idea. But I know one thing. It can't be good if you're just sitting there doing it. And you're point blank where the, whatever it is, the electronic, whatever it is, the lightning stuff, whatever electricity is right on your spine. Mm-hmm. It just cannot be good. So we're going to talk to Mr. Nick Cooper. But before we do that, Nick, we have already a caller. So who do we have on here? Oh, he hung up already. That's I don't want to say that's good, but we'll get back to our caller. So, Nick, tell me. You've been with Food Not Bombs for how long?
For 20 something years.
Oh my goodness. You're like one of the original person. I mean, how long has there been a chapter here in Houston?
Since
go and bring the mic a little closer to you.
Oh yeah, since 94 or so we've been doing it.
That is fantastic. And you know, why is it getting so much attention right now? Because you've been doing it since 94. And why all the hubbub?
So we're out there sharing food in the streets 4 nights a week. We've been doing it for decades. So two things change. In 2012, Mayor Anise Parker passes a law saying that you need permission to share food in the streets. So immediately we did everything we could to oppose the law. We actually managed to get the law a lot better than the original draft that she had put in, which was a crazy draft. There was stuff in there like if you had any food that was in your car, even for a second, on the way to give it to a homeless person, it's automatically like, that's not allowed. You can't have it in a private car, like anything like that. So we managed to water it down a little bit, but it's still pretty bad. It says that you need written permission from the city to go share food.
Is that hard to do? No. Will they give you a permit or something? Is it like saying you got to get a permit?
So think about our case is one thing that you can imagine. We're in a fixed place 4 nights a week, right? So that's the kind of thing that you can imagine applying for. But now imagine the bigger scenario, which is anybody who has leftover food anywhere in Houston, office party, home party, anything they have leftover food. What they used to do before 2012 is say, I'm going to go take it down to the Pierce Elevated. I'm going to go take it down to downtown over by Minute Maid. I'm going to take it there because there's some homeless people. I'll just get it out. There's no way that you can apply for and get permission suddenly moment.
Good point.
This is, you know, this was a huge aspect of the food that homeless people got was this uncoordinated feeding. Someone's like, oh yeah, I got some leftover food. There's some homeless people over there. I'll go bring it to them. So that has been completely shut down. So now you have to know ahead of time where you're going to do it. Now, our organization, we say we're going to share food in public and we're not going to ask for permission. That's simply part of who we are. We share food in public. We don't ask for permission. It's been our experience in all the chapters around the country that asking for permission is the first step towards having your permission taken away. Mm-hmm. We don't believe you should have to ask for permission. And that's one of our principles. So we're willing to, you know, kind of walk the walk on that.
Well, hold that thought. We have a caller right now. Is there a Charlene there? Charlene.
I'll talk for you now. One moment.
Charlene, are you there? Is that song Charlene, Charlene, Charlene? Or is that?
I think
Jolene.
It's Jolene.
It's Jolene, Jolene, Jolene. Charlene, are you there? Charlene, you're talking to a tip from Gilbert Garcia, Nick Cooper, and Ruby Dang. Let's put that call through, whoever that is.
Okay.
I know we're getting a lot of calls, and let's just bring them on through. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Is there a caller there? Isidro, is that you? Or Charlene?
Isidro,
is that you?
I am here, Mayor.
Oh, there you go. I appreciate you. You know what, Isidro, you have me. You have Mr. Nick Cooper and you have Ruby Dang. And, you know, we're talking about feeding the homeless. And, you know, what's interesting is you've been a leader in LULAC for, golly, 40 years probably. And y'all have done so many things to people all over, frankly, all over the country, all over the city, everywhere. So I'm just going through that about feeding the homeless. So what do you got for us today?
Well, actually, I would prefer that people would think that LULAC has done things for the people, not to the people.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. Thank you. Thank you for that clarification.
You got your preposition straight.
There you go.
Well, as we speak, I'm speaking from a community center out on 59 and Bissonnette. We're expecting Mike Morath to come in.
Yes.
And we will be speaking about on education, how, you know, it doesn't go away. When you have every system can be improved. And so from that perspective, that's what the meeting is going to be about. But as far as homeless is concerned, Gilbert, there's no better example than you. And I, this may sound like mutual admiration society. Well, so be it. I prefer that than people just trying to knock people down, to build, not divide, to unite communities and thoughts. And no one has done that more effectively than you have. Whenever there has been a need, and that need is raised to your attention, you always, always, without exception, always satisfy it. I have been down at the library, feeding some of the people. They just don't know where the funds came from, because you're not looking for that.
Right.
I think that's part of the Bible teachings is that if you ever say, "Oh, I gave," that no one's looking for credit. But if there's any credit to be given by Peter when we're trying to get in, it counts against you. It erases all the good. If you raise your hands, yeah, or you do it in front of so that other people can recognize what you're doing, because at that point, are you really doing it to serve, or are you actually serving yourself?
Right.
And there's no better example than what you've done. You helped the people. There was two families from Venezuela that came in. I picked them up at a curb in front of a house. They had one Coke can amongst. There were five then all day. They had no money. And today I can say that because of your efforts, three of the four adults have a job.
Oh, how wonderful.
One is a really good mechanic. The other one is a really good carpenter. And the other lady, works at Michoacana. And all the kids today are going to school. And they're still asylum seekers. There's a lot of problems in that process, etc. But the fact that you asked me about feeding the homeless. They were homeless and they had nothing to eat. Today, they are self-sufficient because of your efforts.
Well, that is kind of you. And I remember vividly, and I thank you for inviting me today. But of course, I had my show. Let me ask you this. You know, when people would ask me on the campaign trail about the whole, I'm going to use this term, takeover of HISD. Part of me would say, well, where have people been for 10 years? You know, they've been talking about taking over HISD for 10 years and nobody's done anything. And the only ones suffering are the kids and the students. And so here we are today. And my view is we need to work with this new superintendent. We need to work with them so we can figure out what does success look like so we can get there as fast as possible so we can get local control back. That's just sort of my two cents. And I don't know if you have a view there that you want to share there, Isidro.
Yes, but as managers, roles that we don't, that are not assigned, it's almost like the community gives you that responsibility on your shoulders because nobody else is doing it.
Right.
The responsibility there is not only to take a fact. You stated a fact. Work with the superintendent that's there. Yeah, we work. Do the best you can.
Right.
With the cards that have been dealt. But also, there has to be a point in time where you say, you know what, this is not working. We need to try something else. And if it gets to that point, we need to have decision makers. And you know, I give a lot of credit to Mike Morath. He is a good man. He's a good person. He's charged with an indefensible job to do. We have 200,000 students that here in HISD, in addition to all the other ISDs throughout the state. For good reason or maybe through politics, the takeover occurred. So now you deal with the cards that are dealt. You just don't poke the eyes
of
those
right.
people that are in decision-making process. You listen and you try to work with them as much as you can. Those are the cards that have been dealt, and try to and do it for the, you know, everyone says we're for the kids, but many of our actions do not reflect that. And so that's the charge that we have. How much, at least, who has the authority? We'll have two of the board of managers will be in the meeting today.
Oh, how great.
And we will have some community leaders. And we'll also have a former chief of staff for HISD that is seeing it from the inside out. And so, you know, you work and then what you see what's really not working, what is disastrous, and you say, okay, how are we going to address it? Mm-hmm. And it's a constant deal. The handout that they're going to receive when they come in is the story of the Hispanics and African Americans in the fight for Texas United for liberty, for dignity, and for independence. The Alamo slave Joe Travis, and then you know when you talk about Sam Houston. We can't talk about Sam Houston without mentioning who was the first president of the Texas Republic, without mentioning the vice president, who is Lorenzo de Zavala. Yeah, you can't mention William B. Travis and the line on the sand without in the same breath mention Jose Gregorio Esparza, who knowing that the siege was happening the next day at the Alamo, his wife Maria Josefa, and brings in her three children to why did she come into the Alamo? So that they could die together as a family.
Wow.
Those are real family values that we all have in common. But for whatever reason, the branding and has caused suppression of people, students, little girls, little boys, feeling good about themselves when they're in school and when they go through fourth grade history of Texas. And the Hispanics that come out and say, hey, we're the bad guys. We killed all the good guys and we burnt them. Somebody taught them the wrong story. Mm-hmm. And Gilbert, you and I have not done our homework. That should not be happening today. The students should feel proud, whatever color of the skin they may be, African-American, Anglo. The Anglo story has been amply told. Look at all the streets in Houston. They're all named after Anglos that were either in the Alamo or had something to do with liberty and independence. Where are the Hispanics? Where are the African-Americans?
Mm-hmm.
We've been a part of that. And so sorry to say that, that's our history, but taking our responsibility serious, we need to address those issues. And hopefully before we die, we're able to say, you know, our great grandkids are not gonna see what our grandkids had to go through because we didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And our kids, I mean, that history is not taught. It's not in the books.
Well, what I'm going to do, Isidro's, please let the, I don't know exact title he has, but both the superintendent or Mr. Morath know that we'd love to interview them on the show. And ooh. I would have you come on the show and be a guest interviewee with me. So just let them know that I'd love to have them on the show. And I'm going to sign off now because I have a guest here that we're going through a lot of things. But I so appreciate you calling. And please extend that invitation to them.
I will. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, my friend.
May God continue to bless your life.
Amen. So, Nick, so going back, y'all taking the position that we're going to do this. What's been the result? Have you had, and I think I know this result, but, I mean, with the new mayor, has there been a new attitude? Not Whitmire. When Mayor Turner came in, was there a change in attitude? And have y'all started getting ticketed? And what's happening with all that?
Yeah. So when Turner came into office, he met with us a few times and he said, hey, we're here with the Coalition for the Homeless. We're going to talk to you, Houston Food Not Bombs. We want to make this work. What do we need to make it work? And we said, we're fine. We don't need any assistance from the city. We do our own thing. They say, well, we want you out of the library. Would you be willing to go to one of these nearby parks? And we said, okay, yeah, we're open to that. You know, just let us know. Every time he would come back a few weeks later and say, here's where we want you to move. This lousy parking lot with no cover, with, you know, none of the benefits, none of the things that we're looking for in a space, not very easy to get to. And he'd say, okay, we're going to move you there. And if you don't go there, we're going to start ticketing you. It was always like this very quickly jumping to a threat. And we said, well, those aren't great options for us. And then he just dropped it. And this happened a bunch of times. And then finally, like in his final couple months in office in March of last year, he decides, well, we'll start ticketing them for violating the food sharing ordinance. Previous to that, cops didn't even know they didn't have a code to enforce it. It wasn't even in their little ticket machines. It wasn't something they could do. But now he said, let's go ahead and start enforcing this against them. And so they started ticketing us. We've gotten 85, 86 tickets now.
Wow.
And I've personally gotten three. And what happens is you just go to court and sit there and miss a day of work or whatever. And then they reset you. And like hardly like one of our cases out of all of these has actually gone to trial. Most of the time you just sit around in court all day for nothing. And then the one that that did go to trial, we won. The jury found that we hadn't, you know, that we're innocent, or not guilty at any rate.
Right.
So that was what he did. In terms of the new mayor, we'll see what happens.
Hold that thought. I want stay with me there.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this: what's the penalty under a ticketing for this?
So you can just say, okay, I give up. You win. I'll pay it off and pay $254.
Wow.
Or you can go to court, and then you're facing between $500 and $2,000 in penalties for every single ticket. So we're facing like $170,000 worth of fines for 9 months of sharing food with the homeless.
And is this, do you think that he's singling you out? It sounds like he is to me.
Ooh, Turner?
Yes.
Oh, for sure.
Think
he
about
didn't
all
enforce
the,
this against th- anyone else, just
think,
us.
Think yeah. about all the other... remember they've had bribery there in City Hall. I mean, think about all the other things that are not being enforced. I mean, Ruby, think about all, we know there are things not being enforced, and think about the housing department and all the, they had to give back $50 million because they couldn't do what they're supposed to do to build 700 units of affordable housing. We know about the health department being raided, you know, and here's a do-good organization. And yet you single them out, and you're just, I guess, trying to bury them with a nuisance. I mean, you're trying to bury them with paperwork, as well as potentially, you know, fines and no telling what else that leads to. Does that sound right to you?
No. And you know what also is interesting that kind of popped into my head is like the city does food giveaways as well. I mean, they just had it for Christmas, for Thanksgiving. Churches give out turkey. So are they treated different?
Yeah, they've gone back and forth with us. But half the time they're saying, oh, you're doing this wonderful work. And then half the time they say, oh, you're enabling homelessness. You're part of the problem. You're enabling people to stay on drugs because you're giving them food. Crazy arguments. The way to get somebody off of drugs is not to make them more desperate in terms of food. Food desperation is not going to have good outcomes. But
yeah, that sounds ridiculous, frankly.
Well, I mean,
right? I mean, think about it.
Say. Yeah.
You're, I mean, like they want to blame giving away food for the reason people are homeless.
Well, I mean, this is what politicians do. They're all corrupt. All of these state, all of these city people, they are all in real estate's pocket. They are all corrupt. National government, same thing. They're all completely corrupt with their stock trades and with their military deals and with their genocides going on. This is a very corrupt system. We are kind of exempt from that. Just because none of us can get any money. We don't even get reimbursed for our gas money. Nothing. Like we don't get paid. And so that takes out the corruption element. But, you know, inside of this system that we are living in here in Houston, homelessness are actually very profitable for certain groups and for certain individuals.
Talk about that a little bit. In other words, it's almost like you're suggesting that people are profiting from other people's misery.
Well, what happened is in 2012 under Obama, there was a bunch of HUD grants coming into cities all across the country, but a lot into Houston, hundreds of millions of dollars every year. And in order to qualify for those grants, you had to prove we're getting people out of homelessness and we're reducing homelessness. And then you keep getting your money. So Star of Hope, majority of their funding is coming in from federal grants. They are a religious fundamentalist institution that's imposing Christianity on Sudanese kids, discriminating against people, but they're getting this federal money. Their CEO gets $560,000 a year. He gave himself over $200,000 raise just between 2020 and 2021.
Come on.
And this, yeah, and that's, so those are, this is a different kind of group than we are. We're not taking any grant money, any federal money, but the two things I mentioned, you have to prove you're reducing homelessness. So that is done by this thing that is very inaccurate called the point in time homeless count. They do it every year. one day out of the year that go around and try to count homeless people. Now, these homeless counts are so notoriously bad that the National Coalition for the Homeless has estimated that they're off by a factor of 10.
10 times?
Yeah, 10 times. So they're really statistically useless. And this isn't just them. You can go across the board. Anyone who's looked into these homeless counts say they're statistically useless. And this is every NGO, everyone that's tried to look at them. But they're using that to justify their grants. And the same people who are doing the homeless count are the ones who are getting the grant money. So the partners of the Coalition for the Homeless are the ones going around doing this homeless count. The other aspect, you have to show you're getting people out of homelessness. The big trick there is, as you might be able to guess, is for how long. If you got somebody out of homelessness, they were in your shelter, now they're in a hotel room for a month, did you get them out of homelessness? That's the other trick. So these grants that were introduced with the idea that they had accountability built into them just had a bunch of bureaucracy built into them. And so proving that you've deserved this grant money every year has become very easy for them to fake the numbers on.
Wow. I mean, you've raised so many issues here. So let's kind of peel the onion here. So things started happening near the end of the mayor's term, and that's when he started amping up the ticketing and so forth.
Well, you'd never gotten a ticket until March.
Wow, never.
Right.
And how do the police officers respond? I mean, a lot of them got to be thinking, maybe we should be finding bad guys, but here we are, you know, ticketing people trying to do good. I mean, if I were a police officer, I'd say, you know, come on, this is not a good use of my time mm-hmm. as a police officer. When you hear about crime being up and we don't have enough police officers, all those sorts of things, but we are dedicating these police officers to harassing the people trying to do good.
They're there for an hour, 2 days a week, every week. They don't come to all four of our food sharings. They come to two of them for whatever reason. But the real crazy amount of time that goes in police time is when they come to our court dates. So I said, we have to sit there all day, right? They're there in force. Like last time I had a court date, there was three cops who couldn't do any other duty that morning because they were just supposed to be there in case my case went to trial, and it did not. So they were just sitting out in the hallway chilling. And so I actually
getting paid too, I'm sure.
I'm sure. So there's a huge allocation, but that is just starting to, that's just the tip of the iceberg, because there are so many of our tickets right now that the entire municipal court system is held up with our tickets, because normally the way that they're set up is like a couple people in all of the courthouses go to trial each day. So you come in, if you have a Class C misdemeanor, which is typically traffic, you come in at 8:00. And then by 10, they figured out, is somebody likely to go to trial? And then in the afternoon, somebody actually goes to trial. It might be 40 people in that courtroom and only one of them goes to trial. Right now, our cases are tying up the whole system because the prosecutors are dealing with all these motions. We have like 10 different pro bono lawyers working for us right now. Like, this is not something that municipal court prosecutors are set up to deal with. They're not set up to deal with appeals and motions to quash and motions to vacate or whatever. They don't
all for 250 bucks or 80 bucks, whatever the fine is.
500 is what they're going for. Yeah. Usually in court, they could go for 2000, but yeah. So, so what they've done is they're like, we don't know. So they've taken our motions for discovery and said, sorry, it's been months. It's been since October that they've had motions for discovery that they just can't fulfill. It's been since November that they've had motions to quash that they can't even respond to. They're like, they're not even set up to write a response brief to these motions that they're getting hit with. And that's what happens when you throw a bunch of people into these municipal courts getting trials. And who, instead of just like, unlike most of the people who are in that municipal court, who are like extremely poor and they can either come in and try to pay their ticket or try to avoid getting a warrant issued for them, we're people that are like, we're down. We signed up. We're going to go to all our court dates. We got free lawyers.
Yep.
You know, we're ready.
God, I mean, what a mess. Ruby, is there something? I mean,
well, I'm curious why all of a sudden the eagerness of them to ticket the organization.
We have their email. The Houston Chronicle did a great job, Freedom of Information Act. So we can see the mayor and the library writing back to each other. And basically the library is saying, we got a lot of homeless people because of the heat. Mayor Turner failed to provide good, nice air-conditioned buildings with bathrooms that the homeless people could go to other than the library. So they go to the library. The library is aware of that. They're saying the heat, but the mayor Turner, the former mayor, heard in his mind, okay, well, we need to change Food Not Bombs. They're the ones bringing people, homeless people to the library. We share food after the library is closed, and homeless people are already going to the library because, like I said, it's air conditioned and has bathrooms. Right. It's a natural place for people to go. He didn't provide anything better. So he heard that and he responded, well, you know, we need to go after Food Not Bombs. He's writing back to the library and maybe we need some more laws in order to do that with. Mm. That's what he wrote. Now, this is kind of like a little disconnect because they're saying the heat is causing a crisis. Right. And he's right. saying, oh, Food Not Bombs is causing a crisis. So for whatever reason, he got it in his mind that I'm going to go after these folks. No one else, everyone else sharing food in other parts of the city that they don't have a system set up.
Are there a lot of others that do?
Well, the biggest thing that you'll see is, like I mentioned, the uncoordinated, right? This isn't a group, this, you know, but even groups have relatively, a church might say, well, every 4 weeks we have a lot of food.
And we have participated in many food giveaways with churches and things. And
right.
it's not coordinated other than they want to do the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's going on. But this is an extremely cynical, crazy thing that the mayor did, because he said, what we're going to do is we're going to make them redundant. So we're going to share food in the police parking lot at 61 Reisner. We're in the HPD parking lot. Right. Sharing food. So then
at the same time?
At the exact same time on the same days. Now, if they wanted to help homeless people, they could have said, well, we'll do the other days.
That's right.
But no, they wanted to make us redundant. They serve a miserable meal. It costs them $9 per plate, and they typically run out. And these, you know, what you'll see is like a chicken wing and some macaroni, or chicken wing and some beans. That's generally what they're handing them in a styrofoam plate. Come look at our plate. We have salads, we got pasta, we got bread, we got, you know, beans. We have a beautiful spread, lots of colors on the plate. And for free, this is food that was otherwise going to go to waste, given to us by supermarkets, by restaurants, by individuals, by, you know, we're getting healthy food that was otherwise going to go to waste, and it's free. The city instead is like, let's spend $9 per plate to make these miserable meals and try to make these guys redundant. Now, of course, a lot of the homeless people don't want to go get food in the police parking lot,
right.
or they don't like that meal or whatever. So it was an attempt to make an optical thing of like,
it almost seems personal somehow. I mean, it's just like, it's like, why wouldn't you say where they're doing this sort of stuff, you know, if they're going inside, maybe you put porta potties outside or something.
Yes.
I mean, some sort of, let's just put porta potties outside. Mm-hmm. If that's bothering people who are doing library work. And it would seem to me, let's work together. You take Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We'll take Tuesday, Thursday.
Right.
At the,
it is personal at the
police station.
You really hit the nail on the head. I mean,
it seems like it to me.
We go to city council, we speak out. I think there are some personal grudges there, but I also think that what you're dealing with is that fundamentally, just who is populating these charities that are giving food to the homeless and the Coalition for the Homeless? This is basically real estate. Real estate don't want homeless people near where wealthy people are going to be. It's simple. And they're not crazy, right? Like, I would not like a bunch of homeless people sleeping outside of my house either, right? That makes sense.
That's right.
Right? But the way that they go about doing that is, instead of trying to find equitable solutions that are going to work for the homeless people, they instead try to criminalize it. That's a terrible way to deal with it.
That's right. We have four callers on.
Cool.
Let's do Charlene Johnson. Was Charlene there? Charlene, are you there?
One moment.
Charlene, are you there? I'm going to try to go rapid fire on these because I want to get back to some. I want to go to the new mayor. Charlene, are you there?
Yes. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Miss Charlene. You have me, Gilbert Garcia of A Tip from Gilbert, with my friend Nick Cooper of Food Not Bombs, and of course, my sidekick, Ruby Dang. What do you got for us?
Oh, I'm calling to let you know about my campaign. I am running to be the next state representative for District 139.
Where's 139?
139 is on the north side of Houston. It goes from Oak Forest, which is 610 Shepherd. Then it goes all the way up 45 to the Spring area, yep. Greens Road.
Do you have a primary?
Yes, the primary is March the 5th. It's coming up quick.
Oh, wow. And so is there an incumbent there or no?
No, there is an incumbent, but it's an open seat. The incumbent is running for another seat. The incumbent is running for state senator, which is Representative Jarvis Johnson.
I see. So he's running for the mayor's seat, and you're now running for his seat.
Correct.
I see. And how many other people are running?
There are four other people in the race.
Well, tell me this. I want to give you some nice pub here. What are the two biggest issues there that you want to work on in that district?
Public education. It's so many issues that that came out from this lab. But public education, you know, with the TEA takeover of HISD, and they don't have an elected board to keep elected officials accountable. And funding is an issue. And also the voter rights, women's rights, affordable health care, crime, infrastructure.
Man, you're ticking off big issues. Let me ask you, what do you do for a living? So what's got you prepared? Why should you be state rep there?
Well, currently I serve on the board of Houston Community College.
Oh, wonderful.
Where I advocate for student services for kids to come and get an education, affordable education. They have options. They can either get an associate's degree or they can learn a trade, which I think helps our community when people can have jobs that help support their families, that create better communities. Education fits the whole family and so on. I also help go to the state to have funding brought in for community college.
Amen. Well, do me this favor. Give me your whole poop here. What's your website, your phone number? If somebody wants to volunteer or donate money to you, how do they do it?
They can go to my website, which is www.electcharlene.com, electcharlene, electcharlene.com. They can go to my website. They can go to my Facebook page. But yes, go there and sign up to register to find out more information about me, but register to volunteer as well. And my platform is on there as well.
Well, Charlene, thank you for calling in. I hope you call in again. I want to make sure.
I will.
Look, it's all of us interest to get people more aware of elections and because you know what? People matter.
Yeah.
Elected officials matter. The laws matter. So thank you for calling in.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your day and Happy New Year.
You too.
Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Charlene. You know, when she was saying her name, C-H-R, all of a sudden in my head, I was saying M-O-U-S-C. I don't know why I was doing that. I almost went to that. Before we go back to Mr. Cooper, I know you had two or three more. Okay, go ahead. Is there a Mr. Capello on the phone?
Hello, Mr. Capello? Mr. Capello? Hello, Mr. Capello, are you on the line? One moment, I'll talk to you now.
Is there a Mr. Capello on the line? Mr. Capello, you've got me, Tip of Gilbert. We're talking about, frankly, we're talking about somehow personal things between elected officials and people just trying to do good. And the focus is on, because that's really what it comes down to. And the focus is about really feeding the homeless. So what do you got for us? Did I lose you? Mr. Capello, did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
What do you got for us, my friend?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to Nick Cooper. You know, he's doing God's work.
Amen.
I was resident of New York City myself for over 20 years. And come on back. We have a lot of homeless people up in the Northeast, and we can use good folks like you. And it's a shame that the city is trying to criminalize the work you're doing. I will ask you one thing is how do more people volunteer for your program?
That's a good one. Hold on. Let's hold that thought, Mr. Glenn. What's if people want to go, what's the website and phone number or everything else?
Yeah. So just check out Houston Food Not Bombs on Facebook or on Instagram, Food Not Bombs HTX. And we're down there. We're in front of the library four nights a week. Show up at 7 o'clock Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. We are there. We're wide open. It's just an all volunteer organization. The only thing is we ask people to bring vegetarian or vegan food. We don't share meat products, and we encourage vegan if possible. And then there are lots of other ways, right? So you can also sign our petitions that you'll find on those websites. We're trying to petition the city. You can also donate. There's a donation page, and I think over 575 people have donated to us across the country. And then and then if you're not in Houston and you're in New York or anywhere else, there's probably a Food Not Bombs chapter there. Mm-hmm. So just look it up.
Wonderful.
Oh, awesome. I definitely will. And the last thing I'll say is I came in to see the national championship game tonight, and I can't wait to take the rail because I know it's going to be the best and easiest way to get there. And thank you, Mr. Garcia, for being the Metro chairman to put that on the map, the rail system here in Houston.
Well, thank you for that. You know what? Do me a favor. Call in next week. We always like get visitors coming to Houston. And just tell us how your experience was.
I absolutely will.
I really want to hear. We go, this is a good test case. Yep. You know, and this is just, you know, it's not. Let's just see how it was.
I absolutely will. I'll take some good notes, and you'll hear from me next week for sure.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. I'm going to take one more, and then we're going to come back to Mr. Cooper. Is there a Blanca Blanco there? Miss Blanca, are you there? Okay. Miss Blanca, are you there?
She's there.
Miss Blanca Blanco, are you there? Are you there, please?
I am.
Oh, hi, wonderful. Yes. You know what? I happen to have read your excellent letter to the editor today. And yes. I'm glad you're calling in because, you know, if you don't speak up, nothing's going to happen. And you spoke up on behalf of really a legend in the minority community, the Latino community. Tell us about your letter.
Yes. Thank you, first of all, for having me on the show, Gilbert. It's such a privilege to be on. Really, how it all started was they had an article regarding remember those who we've lost in 2023. And I looked at the article in the Chronicle, which was Saturday, December 31st, and I counted how many people were on there, and there were 22 people that they actually did a pretty good, a little, well, let me say a quarter of a page article with pictures.
That's big. And that's big.
Yeah. Well, it seemed like that size, but it was a big article with all these folks in it. 22 people. There was four blacks, one, I would say, Italian, Tony Mandola, and one Hispanic, Polo Becerra, who's the chef. And the rest were all, you know, Anglos, which I said, wait a minute, aren't we 44-45% of the demographics in Houston? We should have at least a few more, and especially Frumencio Reyes. He was an icon in our community, and he was left out. So I wrote the letter. That was the genesis of why this happened, because I knew Frumencio Reyes, and to me, he was an icon for the Hispanic community. I mean, he was always in pursuit of fairness and equity in the community for those of the disenfranchised. And I find it ironic that the Houston Chronicle left his obit or an article about informing the community of Houston that we had lost an icon.
You know, I find it outrageous. I find it outrageous
Totally outrageous.
There's half of us are Hispanic now, unless we're saying Hispanic people, nobody died last year. I guess right. Nobody died last year. Or you know,
not anybody that made a big difference in the Hispanic community. Yes, they did have a booklet of a bunch of people that have died in 2023, but it was just their picture and when they died, and that was it, their name. But nothing like they had an article in the front cover, in the front section of the Chronicle. And to me, you know, Reyes fought diligently until the end for political empowerment. And he worked tirelessly working to right the wrongs and champion the causes of those who couldn't do it themselves. So I felt that this was important to highlight in the Hispanic community, because seems like the Chronicle hasn't gotten the message that we are 44 to 45% of the demographics in Houston, and we refuse to be left out, and we're gonna call them on it like we did.
And you know what's ridiculous? It's in their interest to develop a thriving Hispanic community, because we're going to be the people to subscribe to that paper in the future, if not already. It doesn't make any business sense to leave out half the city. It just doesn't make any business sense.
By overlooking the Latino community, I mean, we are a vital part of this community. And it, it just cannot remain underrepresented in the Chronicle. We're a one newspaper town, and they should give us the respect that we deserve, as we are the largest demographic in Houston. And I am not going to stand for that.
Good for you.
Neither is anybody else in our community.
That is so great. You know, I knew Fulvencio Reyes also, and he's one of those guys that, you know, he could have been a high priced lawyer, like ones we read about all the time, and been very, very wealthy. But he made the decision that I'm going to help those that need help the most. And what an extraordinary man he was, because he's the one that brought all the lawsuits about the grand jury system being unfair. He helped so many people, indigent people. I mean, he brought lawsuits against the city to get better representation for people of color. He was the one.
I mean, like I said in my letter to the Chronicle, most of his family were farm workers, and they struggled as well, like all of us do, to eke out a living. And back then, he made a decision in his mind that he was going to fight for those folks that don't have a voice to represent themselves. And he did a great job. And that's why I believe that it was important that somebody say something about us being excluded, because it's time that Chronicle recognized that we are a force to be reckoned with.
Well, I will say, I'll give you the Paul Harvey rest of the story here, Houston. Because of Miss Blanco, they're going to be writing an article. I think I don't want to give it all away, but they're going to be writing an article soon. So stay tuned. And what I would like to do is, Blanca, is after it runs, I want to get you on the show on that Monday after, so we could talk about, you know, what are some things in the media that we can do differently to really do the right thing and to portray the city as it really is. So I'm going to invite you, and I hope you will take me up on that.
I would be happy to, Gilbert. I will be happy to give you my ideas, and I'm sure there are many others that have great ideas to share, and I'd be happy, more than glad, to be there and speak to you about that.
Then you got it. Well, then I'm going to shine off with you, and thank you so much. That, Ruby, that was Miss Blanca Blanco, who's been just a leader in the East End for decades, really speaking out for people. What a wonderful hero she is, or heroine. Is it heroine?
it is heroine.
Yeah, but it seems like a weird word to say. But Blanca, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Gilbert, for letting me know and inviting me. I was happy to be a part, and I want to wish you the best of luck on your continued radio show. This is what we need in our community. Somebody on a radio telling these folks, this is what's missing in our community, and we need to right it to make it. We need to correct the wrongs and make them right.
Amen. Correct. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Nick. I'm going to show the clip. Is that okay with you?
Of course.
Can we tee up the clip? Because I saw the clip, and Ruby, this is what got me and why I reached out to Nick this weekend. You know, here I am on football weekend, and I reached out to him because I just said, this is just not right.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what he did or didn't do. It doesn't matter what Food Bombs is doing or not doing. What matters is, here's a guy just, you know, probably has no weapon or anything. Right. I don't know. I didn't check, but it probably has no weapon. And you have like six big officers, and I don't know what their intent was, but it sure looked like they were there waiting. Hold on, but let's go to the very beginning of it, please. And if you can make sure you have audio, and they had him, and they had him essentially subdued. And then there they are with the actual taser. Hold on 1 second. Yeah. And they have him point blank on his back. And I have seen a picture today of now what his back looks like now. And it's unbelievable how it's like, I don't know if it's permanently scarred or what. Let's tear that up, and then I'm going to ask Nick to just give us his view. Let's tee it up, and Houston, again, if you don't want to see this, please just turn off your TV there. Go ahead there, producer.
Yeah, so you're going to be seeing Houston police subduing and tasing a homeless person who was arguing with them and saying, you should not be arresting this other person. And this was their response. I understand he also had a broken wrist, I believe. And yeah, like you saw, there is a scar looking thing on his back from the taser. And I don't know why it's not playing.
It's going to come on. We're ready.
While we're waiting for this to load, I'll also mention the not bombs part of our name is really important. While all this money that could easily take care of all of the homeless people, of all of our health insurance, everything, all these needs we have in the U.S. is being spent to give 2,000-pound bombs being dropped on civilian neighborhoods right now. Okay. All right, here we go.
Hey, hey, hey. See, here's where it started. Back up. And now the police officer wants to jump on him.
Why, man? What are you doing?
Now he's on top of him.
Oh my. Hey, get the fuck out. Why are y'all?
I think it's a constable, actually, not a police officer.
That's right.
Get off that man.
Now look right there. Look at his hand right there on his back, Ruby. Just directly on the back and the spine.
Bruh, this is all space. This is where we serve food. Y'all came to all space. Y'all came to all space.
The constable is like, please, everyone calm down. We're just torturing someone.
I mean,
tase the wires on the ground. Tase the wires on the ground.
Come on. You know, I would be scared as someone watching to get tased myself. In other words, I mean, he's like, don't say anything because you're going to get tased. Let's go ahead. I mean, when I see something like that, I mean, I understand the concept of, and I support, you know, the men and women in blue, right? I do. But there's like anything, some people that, you don't want to say bad apples. I don't know if that's the right phrase, but you get what I'm saying. That will abuse the authority. You had a man who was not a threat, who was on the ground, and they already subdued him. And then there they are tasing point blank on his spine.
And just think about the, you know, forget the morality just for a moment. Let's just talk about the decision of what are we going to spend money on to deal with the homeless? More cops to tase them or more facilities for them? Are we going to spend the money on helping people in the U.S. or on bombing other countries, on committing genocide across the ocean? Like these are decisions that our very sick society has made. And so I always want to talk about the not bombs part of our mission as well. It's super important. We're an anti-war group. We've been an anti-war group against the Iraq war, against the Afghanistan war, against all of these wars. And right now we are seeing the fastest escalation, the most rapid killing of little babies in Palestine. I'm also a proud member of Jewish Voice for Peace. All four of my grandparents are Jewish, and we are watching Israel committing genocide. This is supposed to be the thing that Jewish people are like, never again, right? We're supposed to be looking for even the potential of developing genocide, and now Israel is committing it in our name.
Wow. And then, of course, you've got Ukraine, all the death and destruction there.
I mean, what we found out about Ukraine has been consistent from the beginning, that there were opportunities to come to a peace deal, and instead the U.S. ramped up Ukraine and basically killed an entire generation of Ukrainian men instead of trying to, they're not going to get a better deal, right? Like after all these months, they're probably going to get a worse deal than they could have gotten last year. But the idea was, well, we'll just keep fighting to deplete Russia, meanwhile wiping out the entire generation of Ukrainian men.
Well, I don't know. Ruby, I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's just terrible. It's terrible. And you know what? If you look at the national budget, what percent now is defense?
I mean, I think if you include both defense and all the debt from our past wars, right? It's getting close to 70.
Yeah, I mean, imagine. Wow. Imagine. I mean, think about if we just said, you know, I mean, not to, you know, give peace a chance, you know, the whole John Lennon. If we just did that and redeployed that money to our schools, to our roads, our infrastructure. Here's someone, you know, talking about taking the money away from Metro. But why is he talking about, well, maybe we should stop, you know, bombing people and you know, building bombs and selling bombs. My goodness, we have our whole mindset upside down.
Yeah, and it's a very scary time because the potential for this particular war to escalate into a much bigger war with Iran is huge right now. I mean, with the Houthis, with Hezbollah, like you were talking about, Iranian involvement. Iran is not like Iraq was when we started that war. They are a full functioning military. You know, same goes for Egypt, right? These are like, this is not something that is, if we go to a war with Iran, the United States might win, but it will significantly impact the life of every American.
And you will destabilize this whole region. And it might take 50 years to get it back into a workable place.
More than that. I mean, take a look. Vietnam War. What was the big benefit of that? Like, you know, these investments into just like wiping out people. What was the bang for our buck there?
And where were the weapons of mass destruction? We still can't find him. No one can find him.
Well, you know who said that more than anyone was us. We were in the streets before the Iraq war saying, like, if there's weapons of mass destruction there, they're just because the U.S. gave them to Saddam and every country has them. So that's not exactly justification. We had no idea they were actually going to find zero. We thought they'd find a little bit, but actually it was even worse than that. But,
wow. Yeah. I think am I getting the hook already? My goodness. This has been, I mean, a whole hour goes like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, can you believe it? We were all, but for a whole hour, I'm going to have you back because I don't think we covered everything. I really like this concept of the not bombs because that's something that we haven't focused on, but we need to for the sake of all humanity.
You were celebrating your holiday and your football season. I'm not celebrating anything right now. Like, this is genocide. This is, as a Jewish person, our whole orientation was supposed to be, we're going to stop the next genocide never again. So it's all hands on deck right now.
You know, amen. I truly mean it. And, you know, that song, Man in the Mirror, it starts with all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, the man in the mirror. I mean, man, but that's the song. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to be cut off here in about 30 seconds. I want to thank Houston. I want to thank Mr. Nick Cooper of Food Not Bombs. And I want to thank Ruby Dang, of course, my sidekick. Kick. We're going to bring you back if you don't mind, because you're very articulate. You really know the issue and you're passionate and it shows. And I want to bring you back.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Houston, you got Gilbert Garcia of A Tip from Gilbert, and we will see you next time.
Thank you. Thank you. The hour goes
so.
Wow. Did you play? Are we off?
Yes.
Okay. Boy, that went fast, didn't it?
Thank you so much. Yeah. Sometimes I you say